Hey everyone, how you doing? This is Amon Green, Green Bay Packers all-time leading rusher, and you're listening to The Average Cheese, hosted by Dell and Todd, two lifelong Packer fans talking about their favorite team, the 13-time champion, Green Bay Packers. Go Pack, go!
What the hell's going on out here? Everybody's grabbing out there, nobody's touching!
Trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win.
Welcome to episode 152 of the Average Cheese Podcast. Thanks to Rhonda and the folks at R&M Management. Thanks to Dwight at ddgcustoms.com. And thanks to Dan and the folks at Bob Anderson Builders. It's Peter and I for episode 152.
The Packers have had a few 52s. Frank Winners. Rashan Gary, of course. And we know who it's going to be. It has to be Clay Matthews III.
And Todd's not even here.
I know it. We really should have saved it for when Todd was here, but there we go. So Packers' first round draft choice in 2009. They'd only been a starter 1 year at USC, and the Packers traded up to get him. So they traded away three draft picks to move up and get him in the first round, because they also took B.J. Raji in the first round of that draft. So that was a pretty good draft in 2009, at the top of the draft. Clay Matthews made an immediate impact, didn't he? You know, he was a pro bowler in his first year, made the all-rookie team, had 10 sacks. Was a pretty special player very quickly for the Packers. You know, in 2010, in that Super Bowl year, he had what I think is one of the greatest defensive seasons in Packers history as an individual. 13 and a half sacks that year, was the Pro Football Writers Association and Sporting News NFL Defensive Player of the Year, first team All-Pro, Pro Bowl, all of that stuff. And I think more than anything else, we will always remember that play in Super Bowl 45, the Spillett Pickett play, when he forced that fumble in the fourth quarter as the Steelers were coming back into that game. I mean, that may have been a Super Bowl, if not a Super Bowl winning play, it was a Super Bowl saving play, perhaps.
Yeah,
that was just one of the great plays that we always see, and we like to go back and watch it and see dear old Kevin Green there on the sideline and all of that stuff. It was something special. Clay kind of continued that kind of form, you know, 2011 Pro Bowl, 2012 Pro Bowl, 2014 Pro Bowl, 2015 Pro Bowl. And of course, in 2014, he moved inside for a little while for the first time, even though he still had 11 sacks that year, and then played predominantly as an inside linebacker in 2015 as well. So it's really, really, really good player. Went on through the 2018 season before playing 1 year with the Rams. And we just remember him as just that great outside linebacker who made plays. He was always around the football, sacking the quarterback, making interceptions, forcing recovering fumbles. He was just a special player. And of course, it'd be remiss of me not to mention the Matthews family, which is, you know, one of the great NFL families. His father, Clay Matthews Jr., played 20 years at linebacker in the NFL, mainly for the Browns. His uncle, Bruce Matthews, played on the offensive line for the Oilers and Titans, and is the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And their grandfather, Clay's grandfather, Clay Matthews Sr., also played in the NFL for the 49ers in the 1950s. And there are other members of the family as well that played football. So it's a pretty special NFL family. Going back to Clay's time with the Packers, he played in 156 games, started in 150, had 83 and a half sacks, 482 tackles, 17 forced fumbles, 6 interceptions, etc., etc. The 83 and a half sacks is the Packers' all-time official leading sack number, and he led the Packers in sacks in 7 seasons. And next year, we'll be inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame, along with Aaron Kampman.
Clay Matthews built himself into a perennial Pro Bowl player, but he played with his hair on fire, like you say. It's a rare occasion where a guy that's that physically skilled also plays like his hair is on fire. I do not think he'll make the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but I am glad that he is in the Packer Hall of Fame, because the amount of joy that that guy brought to my life on a weekly basis for many, many years, he was just amazing. I swear that they were like targeting Clay Matthews. He was like so dominant that we can't let you keep hitting the quarterback so hard. We're going to change the way it's played, like the Clay Matthews rule or something.
And he's just synonymous with the success of that whole era. When you think of that era, you think of Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson and those guys on the offensive side of the ball. On the defensive side of the ball, it's Charles Woodson and Clay Matthews. And like you say, one of those guys that played with his hair on fire.
Yeah. Great hair too. That was on fire. Okay, we're moving on to the slices. Thank you, Peter. Multiple questions from a friend. Eric from Greendale's asked a couple questions again. Here goes. We heard that the Packers are who we thought they were. What is the Packers' identity?
I don't think they have one. Offensively, a growing team, but it will be a predominantly passing team as this goes forward, which fits in with today's NFL. As an overall team, I think because of the situation on defense, I don't think they have an identity right now.
I can't argue with that. We're going to leave that right there. Question number two from Eric. Are the Packers a force to be reckoned with, or are we facing a future of what we see now, which is mediocrity? Want me to answer this one?
Yeah, go ahead.
I do not believe that we are going to go down the road of mediocrity. I think that the Packers, the way they build their team, keeps us from the ebbs and flows. And I believe that Jordan Love, as the quarterback of the Packers, alone will keep us from mediocrity, just like the two guys that played before him. They will continue to score points if they can get any kind of defense at all on the other side of the ball. I think that they are going to be a very good team as long as Jordan Love is the quarterback of this team. Question number three, Peter, what positions do we target in the draft?
I mean, you immediately look at left tackle because we don't know what the situation with David Bakhtiari is. And even if he does come back, you still got to be looking at the next guy. If Bakhtiari plays, we don't know. But if he played another 2 years, you still got to be looking at the guy that's going to be the eventual guy there. And you're looking for a guy that's going to start for a decade. So cornerback wouldn't surprise me again. A, you can never have enough of those guys, but it's a position of, you know, with Jair injury, with Rasul Douglas having been traded, it's absolutely a position that you'd like another guy in there. We don't know whether Eric Stokes with his injuries will get back to where he was or what he will become. You know, he's still only a third year guy, so we still don't know where Eric Stokes' career is going. So yeah, corner wouldn't surprise me at all. You'd like to say safety because they need help there, but how many of those guys are worth a high draft pick? So you might be looking at safety in round two or lower down the first round if you trade down, that kind of thing. But for me, it's the high caliber, high, you know, the positions that you always need, and they're tackle and corner. What do you think?
My problem with the offensive line is it depends on where the Packers are in the draft. Can you get a left tackle for the next 10 years if you're 9-8 and you made the playoffs in round one? It's not likely. You might be able to get a right tackle at that spot, and then do you move Zach Tom to left tackle and do all kinds of things? I think they need a left tackle. I also think they need a linebacker. I don't need one in round one, but Devondre Campbell ain't it. I think you could probably pick a guy in the second or third round that should be serviceable. I don't think you try to pick a Quay Walker clone. I think you look for a guy that can play the run a little bit. And I agree with you on safety. If I'm looking for a safety, and we'll talk about this down the road, I want a veteran. I don't want a young guy at safety. If you don't get one in round one, you're not getting an elite athlete. I don't want just serviceable. If I'm going to get serviceable, I want to get it out of a free agent, not out of a draft pick. So the Packers play Carolina Panthers on Christmas Eve. Injuries, again, we record on a Monday, so we're not sure what's going on with A.J. Dillon, Christian Watson, Darnell Savage. We don't have any idea. Tell us a little bit, Peter, about Packers versus Panthers history.
Really short history. It goes back to 1997. Of course, the Panthers were an expansion franchise in 95. And there's been 17 games in the series, which the Packers lead 11-6. Although the Packers just lead 5-4 in games played in Carolina, which is where Sunday's game is. Packers have won the last two, although they haven't played since 2020. And the biggest game in the series, and one of my favorite all-time Packers games, was the 1996 NFC Championship game, which was the very first game in the series, which was played in January 97, which the Packers won 30-13, earned that spot in Super Bowl 31. And for me, it was almost bigger than winning the Super Bowl itself. For the Packers
to
win that game at Lambeau Field and to go back to the Super Bowl for the first time in 30 years, first time in, you know, that we could remember. It was just such a special, special game. That feeling that, yeah, the Packers can still do it. The Packers are going to the Super Bowl. You know, and to win it there at Lambeau Field in the cold, to be presented with the George Halas Trophy on Lambeau Field's turf was very, very special.
My side note, my dad passed in 95, 96. Like, he passed, and my dad was the reason that I started watching Packer games. It's the reason I cuss in the living room at Packer games. So, Dad, I blame you. It's not my fault that I cuss during Packer games. But he was like the reason that I started watching Packer games. There was an article that came out around that time. I don't remember which one of the Journal Sentinel writers that was. It said, "I wish my dad was here." And that's how I felt. Like the guy wrote that article for me. Because, like, I have my dad to thank for this Packer fandom. And he and I didn't get to watch that Super Bowl. I don't mean to drag us down into the weeds, but I thought that same thing. And getting to that Super Bowl for the first time in my lifetime and being a Packer fan my entire lifetime, that was a huge game. Talk a little bit about the coaching staff. So Frank Reich was fired. Their GM is probably also going to get fired. Scott Fitterer. He's only been around for a couple of years. I wonder if the ownership group will replace him because he bungled the whole Frank Reich thing. Their new quarterback may not be it. They might have bungled the draft. We'll talk about that when we talk about your draft guys. They have an interim head coach, Chris Tabor, who was the special teams coordinator. Why would you put that guy in place if you're the ownership group?
I would imagine that it's a case of not wanting to disrupt either the offense or the defense.
Because they're doing
I mean,
so
midway through the
I'm
season
kidding.
with six games left, or whenever it was, the kind of, I won't say the easy choice, but the least disruptive choice is to pick the special teams guy and leave all of the other units in place. Because if you move one guy, so you move your defensive coordinator, you've got this whole cascade of movement going on, and I would imagine it's that.
So the offensive coordinator is Thomas Brown with the Rams. Defensive coordinator is Ejiro Evero, who I thought the Packers might bring in instead of Joe Barry. He was with the Broncos back in the day. Kind of wish they would have. James Campen, former Packer, is their offensive line coach. Dom Capers, senior defensive assistant. Maybe he can just walk over to the other. He might have to wheelchair his old ass over to the other side. But maybe Dom Capers could come over to the other side for just a little bit. Go up into the booth for Joe. I don't want that. I don't even know why I'm saying these words. Jim Caldwell, who was the former Lions head coach and a pretty good one,
Yeah.
is their senior assistant. I wouldn't mind seeing Jim Caldwell on a Packers sideline as a senior assistant. Interesting. They got a lot of guys with names you know for a team that's not very good, but they're developing. Like, this is a team that they knew they were going to be bad. So you bring in a coaching staff, which I assume is a bunch of guys you think can coach up young guys and build guys who've been in the league for a while, who have experience and have success. Jim Caldwell, Dom Capers, Ejiro Alvaro. Like, these are guys who have had success in the league. No former Panther players on the Packer roster. Adam Stenovich was a player with the Panthers, although he never sniffed the actual roster. He was cut before the 53. Panthers who were on with the Packers. None of those either, but as we spoke of earlier, the two coaches are now Panther coaches, Campen and Dom Capers. And no former Badgers are on the Panthers roster either.
And I should say, I got that snippet about Adam Stenovich being on the preseason Panthers in 2006 from the Packers Media Guide. I should cite the source there, Packers Media Guide.
It's a real tidbit right there. Who would know that? You would, Peter. You would know that. All right, let's look at their draft picks. Bryce Young, first pick out of Alabama. He was mentioned in the first couple of picks. There was no question he was going in the top five. Tell me what your thoughts are. I usually ask you what your favorite is, but tell me your thoughts on Bryce Young. Why is he not having the success of the first pick overall?
So you're absolutely right. I mean, I think there wasn't any question that he'd go in the top two, I think. And it was just a question of whether he or CJ Stroud went first. I think firstly, I think he's gone to an offense that lacks experience, although they've got Adam Thielen in there at wide receiver, that when you look at the receiving core and the offensive line, it's a work in progress, should we say. So I don't think he's gone to an offense that's particularly helped his development. Some of that comes back to the trade that they made with the Bears to get him in the first place. Because giving away the draft picks that they did was one thing, and you can question whether that's the right level, moving from 9 to 1 to give up two number ones and a number two, etc., etc. Giving up DJ Moore as part of that trade was huge. There's almost been the kind of missed part of that trade. You know, it was kind of almost people kind of saw that as kind of a throw-in. DJ Moore is a damn good football player that if he were coming to the Packers, you'd say, yes, please.
I
Because he's
wanted
a,
them all last year.
yeah,
It kept coming up. I
he,
kept saying yes to that.
that's the number one reason. Two, I think that there is still the question mark around size and durability. And until a 6 foot quarterback is a consistent success in the NFL, that question is always going to be there. There will be one eventually that's that guy, but whether that's just an anomaly or whether it becomes more of the norm, that question remains. And then I think the third question, and you have this with guys that are at successful college programs, you know, which Alabama obviously is, and Georgia has been in recent years. When you play with a lot of good players, sometimes difficult to completely work out which ones are good and which ones are, or which ones are very good and which ones are just good. The jury's out.
So who's your favorite draft pick of the Panthers?
I mean, I liked Jonathan Mingo, right? Because I thought he would be a Packers-type receiver. 6'2", 220. He kind of had that kind of, especially the 220 part, had kind of that Packers build of receivers that they liked. But I thought he'd be like a fourth or fifth round guy, and he went in the second round. And it's done okay. Probably my favorite pick. I like Jamie Robinson later in the draft, but he's small. Again, 5'10", 5'11", for an NFL safety is not great, and he's not a huge guy at all. Very feisty type of guy. So I liked him later on in the draft.
As I look down your list in the notes, all these guys, you're pretty accurate with things. And like pick 80, the third round pick, you had it at 174. Like that's way down. Like these are guys, as you would say, not value picks. Until you get to Jamie Robinson at the end, where you had him higher on your board and they got him later.
I think sometimes, though, I think, be fair, when you get past the first three rounds, let's say, teams then start drafting more for need than necessarily complete value. Because I think they take the view that once you get to round four or round five or round six, it doesn't matter. But I'm not going to pick a running back when I've already got five of those guys, even if he's the best player on the board at that point.
Right.
Whereas if I've got a hole at safety that we talked about earlier, I might reach for a guy there. I'm not as bothered about that. It's the reaches earlier in the draft that bother me.
So their season so far, they just won a game. They are still in the first pick spot for the NFL draft, which we all know is going to the Bears. They beat the Texans. They beat the Falcons. That was an ugly game. There were like eight people watching that game, and they were all family members of players. Frank Reich was fired mid-season. Bryce Young, as you said, hasn't been very good. I see you put in the notes that they're averaging just over 14 points a game. We can guarantee they will go over that this week. Their defensive depth chart, at least guys you've heard of, led by, I would say, Brian Burns. That's my favorite player on the defensive side of the ball. J.C. Horn, I think, is a pretty good player, too, at corner. Looking back, Peter, if we could do this draft all over again, Brian Burns or Rashawn Gary? Did you know I was going to ask you that question?
Something similar to that question immediately came to my mind, because when you were talking about Brian Burns, I nearly said the guy that could have been a Packer. Well, I think you got two different players, to be really honest, even though they both line up at that outside linebacker stroke edge spot. I think you've got a bigger guy in Rashawn Gary that plays the run as well as rushing the passer, who fits the kind of Packers mold, 270-pound outside linebackers. Brian Burns is that pass rushing outside backer. I guess at the time, I would have taken Burns rather than Gary. I think Burns was productive, very productive, immediately coming into the NFL. And that's one of my things that I like to see out of first round picks. I know you're not always drafting for next year, but I think eventually you have to get first round picks that play straight away. But I think it's a bit of a push. I don't think there's a lot to choose between them. They're different types of player.
Gary fits the Green Bay mold. I would say I worry about him come Sunday. That's the guy that worries me. As we look down the list, depth chart again, I'm tired of saying this. This is a team where it doesn't look like they have a ton of skill talent, but does it matter anymore? I don't feel like it does. Chuba Hubbard is fine. Miles Sanders is fine. You know, he's a backup type player. Adam Thielen is like 5 years past his prime. Jonathan Mingo and his size does scare me, like Todd said with Mike Evans from last week. Big receivers should give the Packers fits because they don't have Rasul Douglas a physical guy to take on a bigger wide receiver. So Mingo is a little bit of a concern.
As I said earlier, when we talk about Bryce Young, I think it's an offense it's struggled. There's no other way really to put it. You know, the 30th overall in total offense, 31st passing, 17th rushing. I think the roster, the names that you've just read out, that kind of reflects that. You've got some decent running backs in Chuba Hubbard and Sanders, but you know, they're rushing at 3.9 and 3.3 yards per carry. The offensive line is serviceable without being one of the top offensive lines. It's the type of offense that on a normal day you'd say, yeah, I wouldn't mind playing against. If I had to choose an offense to play against,
Maybe that
it would
one.
be something like this.
Again, Brian Burns is their best player on defense. The Packers should be able to score points against the Panthers, although they won, what, 9-7 last week? We need to talk about your guy, Bijan Robinson, at another time, too, because I don't get it. He's killing my fantasy team. Never gets the damn football. Anyway, I mean, they just held an NFL football team to 7 points. A little bit concerning, although I do feel like the Packers should be able to move the ball. Their special teams is fine. Again, it's not great. Any Pinheiro. Would you mind having him as a Packer? I wouldn't mind. I'd take him. And they've got a decent punter in Johnny Hecker. Here's my concern, and this is not about the Carolina Panthers, Peter. So we just started doing this like PFF grades after every week. The Packers' PFF grade on defense continues to go down.
So what's funny is the listeners can't see this, but you're staring at me shouting as you're saying that, like it's my fault.
It's your fault, Peter. I'm actually looking at the notes, not at you. It's not your fault. But every week it started, our defense was 17th in the league. Then it was 18th. Then it was 19th. Now it's 22nd in the league, 30th against the run. Chuba Hubbard's going to have a great game, probably. I've been very optimistic about the Packers season right from the start, but I'm getting a little worried. This should be a bounce back game. Everything speaks to this is a game we should win. It's a team with 2 wins who doesn't have an offense that scares you. This is the third week in a row I feel like I'm saying the same things. Are you nervous for this
Oh,
week?
very. The team coming off a win, you know, they lost 6-1-1, lost 6-1-1. But I think that kind of team, you know, you talked about rah-rah coaches earlier. A win like that can make a team suddenly rah-rah. They rally behind their new interim head coach, especially in the way it came about. You know, they won with a last second field goal. You know, one play can kind of spark a team. And yeah, I'm really worried because, again, I think it's one of those games you talked about ad nauseum for the last few weeks. You have to get on top of these teams early. Take the opening kickoff, march it down the field, get the ball back, march it down the field, put them away early.
Right, game over. You can't score more than 14 points. You've proven it through the entire season. We're up 14 nothing.
But if they hang around,
Yeah, then we're in the
it's going to
same
get ugly.
boat, right? We're in the same boat as we were against the Giants. I don't know that Bryce Young can light up the Packers at this point in his career. The over-under is 36.5. Are they going to have weather again? Because that seems awfully low. All right, the Packers are favored by 4 points again against the third-ranked defense. I don't know, Peter. I can't. I don't even know where to go with this. I usually have, like, I already know what I'm going to say before I get on the show. Like, I know the Packers are going to win, and I already have a score because I've thought about it. I do not know what's going to happen in this game, but I'm going to go first. So here goes. The Packers are favored by 4. They're going to cover the spread. So the Packers are going to win, even though I'm not super confident in it. I think they will win 27-10. They will just go over the 36 and a half. 27-10. Packers win. They do get up early and they win handily.
I hope you're right.
Me too, but I'm not super confident in it. I got my fingers crossed. It's an audio podcast. Can't see that.
I think that this game's a lot closer than that. I think that Carolina does move the football. I think the Packers bend but don't break. But I think they give up 4 field goals and 1 touchdown. And Carolina gets 19. And I think the Packers win 20-19.
Oh man, are they
I
gonna
think
win
that.
on a meatball field goal?
No, I don't think so. I think the Packers are going to score 3 touchdowns but miss an extra point.
Of course they will.
I think this is 20-19.
So over, but they don't cover. Got
Or
it.
maybe even 20-18 as I think about it.
Okay. They'll go
But
for two to try to tie it, and then they'll miss the 2-point conversion. I swear I'll be on my couch stroking out. If that's happening, I'll be having a stroke right there.
Your poor dog will be hiding under the bed. Sausage will be.
Yeah, sausage would be upstairs under the bed, probably. I am a slow burn, as I probably mentioned before, that I am very calm and I'm not calm. I'm quietly angry most of the time until I can't take it and I just blow a gasket. And that's when he's out for the game. Hopefully sausage will be safe. So thanks for listening to episode 152 of the Average Cheese Podcast. Of course, it's the Clay Matthews episode. Go Pack Go.
Back up.